Hello to everyone in the entire world. Welcome to List Them and Learn, Episode 3. My name is Matt Feuerstein, and today we're going to be counting down the top 10 games for the original Nintendo Entertainment System, which is fitting for someone as old as me. Before I get into it, just wanna, so, some people might be wondering why I don't have any bumper music for this show. Main reason, only reason pretty much, is that I'm paranoid about copyrights. And I don't want to use some generic stock music. So, and I tried looking up the rules for it, and I didn't find anything that was particularly comforting. So, if anyone listening knows anything about the legality of bumper music and what I can and can't use, shoot me a line and let me know, because I would love to, jazz this thing up a bit. Okay, now to our list. Joining me today to count down the top 10 Nintendo games of all time is a good longtime friend of mine. Roger Matthews, a longtime video game aficionado, you might say. Roger, how are you today? Welcome to my podcast.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So, Roger, don't want to waste too much time getting into it, but maybe tell me a little bit about your history with Nintendo, video games, the like. Why are you a good person to run down this list with me?
Oh God, I have to make it quick. Oh my God. I mean, I think when I was that age, I was just obsessed. It was everything. It was just when I was anywhere, I was thinking about video games. When I was at home, I was playing video games. Nintendo era is just, it was amazing. So I'm very, very interested in that.
And you're also a pretty avid gamer in the sense of you were somebody who wanted to complete things and you were interested in being good at it. It wasn't just a kind of like on the side hobby for you.
Actually, yes, I kind of saw it as a future career. When I beat a game, I would draw the levels for it, and I would do many stupid things like that. I was very into that, yes.
All right, well, what about now? What is your relationship with video games at your current age?
I see it as a transition that I think the things I liked about video games at that point kind of led me into what I do now. I make short films. I like to, do creative things like that. And I think the atmosphere and the mood and, the kind of being sucked into something really, something that I considered artistic at that point. And I still consider some games artistic. I felt like that left a huge impression on me overall.
And I think that's a good transition to my next question, which is, given that you're making this list of the top games, what were you looking for? What qualities made a game, a great game? What made it a top 10 Nintendo game? What were the things that spoke to you in a game that made it better than others?
That is an excellent question, and I did think about this, and I really was looking for games that, not things that I enjoyed at the time. For example, at the time, I or even later on, I really enjoyed had I a lot of fun playing like Ninja Turtles 2 Arcade Edition or Battletoads or very like fun games, but I don't think they really hold up or are very influential or very groundbreaking. So I really focused on things that I feel like they stand up today as you can still play them and you can see the huge influence they have today.
Is it fair to say that your tastes in video games are more along the lines of something with some sort of strong narrative or some sort of developing storyline that unfolds in a game?
Yes, absolutely. That is, I guess I can't tell you now what my list is, but yes, that is definitely a very good summary.
Yeah, I mean, we've had this debate before, but I know for me, to me, the art in a video game, and I'm not as into them as you are, but certainly as a kid, they were a big deal for me, especially during the NES, SNES, Sega Genesis eras. They're a big part of my life, and I know for me, the thing that I find artistic about a game is the gameplay design. I know that's what really speaks to me. So when I was making my list, I thought of that. The way levels interact, the way characters interact with the world, the mechanics of a game, inventiveness in mechanics, that's kind of the most important aspect to me in the games that I ranked. So I
Yeah,
think,
I'll go
sorry, go
ahead.
ahead. No, go ahead.
I think that's an excellent point, and I think I don't disagree with the way you think about that. I think that that actually as a segue, I think that wasn't the final criteria for me that I listed games that I felt were influential, but the order I put them in is a personal bias, and I think that, you know, some games others might consider higher because of their gameplay versus my bias towards more story-driven games.
Fair enough. Now, before I get into it, I'll just say for me, I got an NES on my 6th birthday in 1989, and so maybe a little bit late to the NES party, but if you actually look back, that was a perfect time to get a Nintendo. A lot of amazing games came out in like 1989, 1990, and you'll see a lot of them on the list. And so I was doing it pretty young, and they were just. We're just flooded with amazing games for that system at that time. I'm really lucky, just a lucky age to be in. Roger, did you get the NES around a similar time as I? You're the same age as me, so.
Yeah, I think I think when we've talked about it, our growing up, I think I had it slightly earlier. In general, I got everything late. I got games later, I got systems later, but I had a Nintendo very early because it was a present. My parents got it, and then they never played it. But I very early on was had at least Mario in the house.
So your earliest game memory is the original Super Mario Brothers.
Absolutely. And then for some reason my dad came home one day with Ghosts and Goblins, and it was like this random thing, and then we didn't have much else but like Ghosts and Goblins and Mario.
Sounds like a horror story. Your dad came home with ghosts and goblins.
Yes, it was terrifying.
Well, speaking of terrifying, let's get into our lists. Roger, what is your number 10 pick for the greatest NES games of all time?
This was actually my hardest slot because I had a lot of things I was on the fence about, and but I decided to go with River City Ransom. Should I get into why, or do you want to tell your list your game first?
Hey, go ahead. What's your take on River City Ransom?
I was looking at a few others that maybe had different qualities, and I felt like ultimately I just thought it was had a lot of character and a lot of personality, and it was pretty a little inventive, like the fact that it was this beat 'em up game that kind of was an existing genre, but it added in these RPG elements and these kind of, it was, and the sense of humor was kind of, like the barf text. It was just kind of, I think it just gets a lot of points for being, kind of thinking outside the box a little bit.
Definitely a very inventive game. Not the most promoted game, so I don't think it was an all-time hit the way some of the other games were. But
Yeah, actually, apparently, I was reading that, yeah, it didn't do very well in the U.S. at all, but apparently, it was part of this whole series in Japan, and it did very well in Japan as a part of this greater series. But yeah, it never took off outside of Japan.
all right, very interesting. And we might maybe a hint. We might talk more about it later. I'm taking a similar tact as you are as far as my number 10 slot. It was also very difficult for me, and I'll mention my honorable mentions later. But there were a lot of games competing for this spot, and I didn't know what to go with, but I also went for the unique, and I ended up going with Blaster Master.
Oh, excellent. I love that game.
It's unlike any other game
Yes.
that I can think of. It mixes side scrolling with this almost weird, almost action RPG overhead view. It
Yes.
feels very non-linear. It was, I mean, listen, I played this game when I was like 6 or 7. It was confusing as shit. And
Yeah. I never beat it.
no, me either, but whenever I played it, like, and I was able to get further and further, it revealed new layers to me. And I find that for uniqueness, there's very, very few games from that era that can beat it. I don't think many games ever try to replicate the stuff that it did. And I think that alone is enough to put it on that level. I also thought the gameplay was very good. I thought it all made sense once you started figuring it out. But I almost think the fact that it was a little bit more difficult to understand is almost a boon, because you want a game to be something that you kind of discover and explore and kind of do trial and error to figure it out. So I feel like that's part of the reason that I went with it. It's just different. It's interesting. I don't really have much more to say, but that holds a lot of value for me.
If I may add, to that. To like, I
Yeah,
think to
sure.
me, like the really, I mean, the fact that it freaking, can I curse or,
Yeah, as much as you want.
it's like it fucking starts with a kid and his frog that turns into a giant frog and jumps down a hole, and then you jump after him into this giant hole, and you put on a suit it makes no sense, but it's compelling. It's like, where is this frog going? Why is it huge? Why are you in a suit? Where are you? It's just, I think it's one of the most memorable openings to an
Yeah, I
Alias
mean,
game.
this was starting in the era. I mean, this came out in 88, so this was just beginning in the era where a game would open with like a cutscene like that. And it really kind of, I know you talked about things being immersive. It immerses you into the world, and then you're there, and you're like, okay, what am I supposed to do? Where is this? What am I? And you little by little, you figure it out. And I think that's one of the most rewarding parts of these games.
Yeah, 'cause it's funny since we both of us never beat it, but like games from that era, like it was like they weren't necessarily designed to be beaten or beaten easily, but it was like just interesting to play them regardless.
Yeah, though definitely. I mean, especially for kids. I mean, like I said, we were very young, and some of these games were very hard, way harder than a lot of the major games now.
Oh yeah, it's the, yeah, the NES era I think is like it's known for being the most masochistic overall. But I mean, it was great. It wasn't like a bad thing, but
No, I mean that's kind of what you want.
yeah.
So your number 10, River City Ransom, my number 10, Blaster Master. So, let me know, what did you choose for number 9?
All right, another hard choice, and I think that for some people this would be higher. I chose Metroid because it's again it's a very innovative game. It had a you know I mean the fact that later on Symphony of the Night, right? Castlevania. You meet
For the
for the
PlayStation.
PlayStation, it was, it kind of called, like it became called Metroidvania because of just how much it borrowed from Metroid. And, this idea of like you're combining like this Mario platforming, but like Zelda with this adventure aspects, but also it's very dark. And it's just and also, it borrows a lot from Alien and Giger influences, H.R. Giger, the artist who designed the alien creature. And also the soundtrack, it was by a Hip Tanaka, who was like a huge like staple, like a hugely influential Nintendo composer. And the soundtrack, if you listen to it, it's actually very ambient, like and very experimental. Like soundtracks at that time had very very catchy melodies, like Mario, do 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 do
Oh
do
yeah, I
do,
mean, yeah. I mean,
and
I know my father still remembers a lot of those catchy hooks from those games
Yeah,
there.
they're very memorable and they're great. But this was, I think, one of the first games to have a soundtrack that's purely ambient, like a film soundtrack. And it
It's
just creates a
moody.
very, very moody, and it's like it really adds to the creepiness to it. And it also, I think, it was one of the first games with a. It was like a half-assed thing, apparently, they threw in halfway through, but it's one of the first games with a female protagonist. Not the first, because I think it can. Like a gamer, like a year earlier or something, did it, but I think it's the first, one of the first. So it's just,
Now, when you mention a game a year earlier, it really doesn't matter then. I mean, Metroid was the first one that mattered that had a female protagonist.
exactly. It's the first, like anybody will knows about Metroid if they played games.
Yeah,
So
now, I
yeah.
mean, like you said, it is a little bit half-assed in the sense that it doesn't really factor in. You kind of find it out at the end.
Right. Yeah, it was
But
added in at the end of development, but
it's still a nice touch.
yeah, they thought about it.
My number 9 is it's Ninja Gaiden 2.
Oh God, yes.
And I'm a big fan of the first three of those games for the NES. Number 2 is the one that holds the closest spot in my heart. It's the one that I personally purchased first. And also, I think it adds some unique elements that the first one didn't have. It kind of builds upon it. For one thing, it created the power up of the character cloning. It also created the scaling walls element. But really, what's great about this game is level design. It's basically just a guy jumping on things and slashing his way through a side scroller. But the levels were very interestingly designed. They had wind, they had climbing, they had internal and external areas, and the boss battles were, I think, the progression of difficulty was reasonable and fair. It also involved cutscenes that were actually, I recall them being pretty compelling. Like that, I wanted to know where this story was going, and for a side scroller at that time, it's pretty odd, and I think that adds a lot to it too. So Like I said, there's really not so much to the gameplay, but it works perfectly. And when you take that, combine it with the scenery and this plot line and the cutscenes, I think it creates a incredibly memorable experience. And to me, it's the best game of that series.
Yes, yeah, I mean, yeah, I think you nailed it when it's like it's not necessarily just the gameplay, but just the whole presentation of the atmosphere and the cinematic touches to it. Yeah, it's just it creates a real lasting. I mean, the opening cutscene I think is just, it. Just, I think that's the most memorable one of the series to me.
I think I would agree with that. All right, so number nine, for Roger, Metroid. For me, Ninja Gaiden 2.
Yes.
You're number eight, Roger.
Okay, I think this one is kind of a no-brainer to add in here somewhere. Mega Man 2. I mean, like, I didn't even know this until recently that apparently the first game flopped. It was considered too hard. No one bought it, e either in the U.S. or Japan. And basically, the development team pushed to work on it in their free time. They were like, it was just like Capcom didn't even let them work on it. They just said, all right, when you're not working on other stuff, work on Mega Man 2. And they did, and they used stuff that was rejected from one. It was like this real like passionate thing. And I think when I see online, it's I think still considered like the best, at least the best in the NES series. And it kind of perfected everything from one and just added in a lot of really, Yeah, initially, yeah, it was the highest selling in the series, and like Mega Man 9, that nostalgic redo later on, it basically just took Mega Man 2, and it was 1 and 2, but it was mainly 2, because it's such a standard for the series.
I think you're right. And now, this is a really tough question. I had a hard time with it myself. What makes Mega Man 2 better than Mega Man 3, which I think is the other one that people might consider one of the top Mega Man games? And and that one introduced the sliding and rush, which became a staple in the series. What did Mega Man 2 have? Was it mainly just the fact that it did it first, and it really like streamlined the Mega Man, just the idea of Mega Man, the menu screens, the setup of the levels, the building of difficulty and the strategizing? Was it mainly that, or was there something more that made it above and beyond the other ones in the series?
Yeah, I think that actually it was kind of a it was a close call between 2 and 3 for me as well. But I think that yeah, I think ultimately it did it first. Three, it added elements, but they were nowhere near as dramatic as the difference between 2 and 3. And I think the series continued that way with 4 and 5 and 6 and et cetera. They all just built on 2, and nothing ever really was as dramatic since then.
I think I agree with all that. My number eight, which I think we holds a close spot in all of our hearts, may be a more controversial pick for a top 10, but maybe it's personal. I have Crystalis, which I always called Crystalis, so I'm probably going to keep
Wait,
calling it that
I,
while I
wait,
talk about
is
it.
it Crystallis? I always thought it was Crystallis.
I've heard it advertised as Crystalis.
Oh, weird.
So that's my number eight. And for me, it was kind of like the ultimate NES action RPG. It combined element. I mean, it combined things that it took from The Legend of Zelda, but it gave it a much, well, I wouldn't say a much deeper story, but a little bit more of a cohesive story thread. It kind of you kind of took you to places you didn't expect at the beginning. You start out in one kind of world, and suddenly it throws in all these other things, whether it be outer space or palaces of different kinds, the Amazon world. And it kind of always bent a little sideways. Like you weren't just traveling through the world map, but then suddenly you had to double back. You had to teleport. Sometimes you had to teleport into places you already were in order to do things. It really used the idea of new skills and powers in a unique way. It really used the idea of items in a unique way. Sometimes you just had to search a random bush and find an item. It just gameplay elements that you didn't see in any of the other NES games. And I think there might have been some technical glitches with it that some people might still hold against it. But for me, it was very eye-opening in terms of like what can be done with a game, and the different kind of intricacies could go into the gameplay and the linearity aspect of a game. It was still a linear game, but the way you navigated the world was non-linear, and you could go into areas that you couldn't actually do anything in because you didn't have enough life or you didn't have the right item. And it just made for an incredibly memorable experience for a kid playing a an RPG.
Actually, I don't remember the glitches. What were the glitches?
Stuff like enemies hitting you even when they're not touching you. Like just weird like sensory stuff like that.
Oh yeah, I got you. Yeah, it's funny, that was on my reject list, and I love that game. It was the one game where I when I rented it, I actually begged my parents to pay the late fees so I could have it for just one more day, which was pointless. Didn't do anything, but I was really into that one. Yeah.
Well, I think anybody who came up in our era of the 2-day video game rentals, cartridges, and you would just always remember the one more day thing. And yeah, very rarely did it work out after just one more day.
Yeah.
So, number 8 for Roger, Mega Man 2. Number 8 for me, Crystalis. Number 7, Roger.
This is an obvious one again, but Super Mario Brothers, the original one. It's just, I mean, what can I say that hasn't been said about this? Actually, I can say a few things. I everyone jokes about, like the magic mushrooms, and actually, I did read an official interview with Miyamoto. And it is based on folk stories of going into forests with magical mushrooms. And that's why the Mushroom Kingdom is named that way. It's based on actual, the idea of like these folk stories. And also Miyamoto was very big on, basing games on Hollywood films and things like that. And I think that there's a Disney influence as well, a kind of Alice in Wonderland-y kind of feel to it. I think there's a lot of influences like that in it. And it also, I didn't know that it was, how in Japan they had the Famicom disk system where, you would actually, for those who don't know, it's instead of just a cart, you would actually have, like a physical disk that you could write to. And this was like the last of the regular cart era in Japan. For us, it went on for the whole time. But in Japan, this was one of the last, basically their last game that they made. So it was kind of a bit of a swan song. And it was kind of an actual combination of everything they had done in that genre, like Excitebike and Kung Fu. They consider this kind of like an for for many people, it's like the first game on Nintendo, but it actually in Japan, the system had been out for a while, and this was kind of a polished, amalgamation of what they, and that genre of gameplay. So it's like I just. I can add one other thing that apparently originally they had the idea of Mario sometimes flying around and like shooting bullets, and then but they decided to go with the jumping gameplay. They went through a lot, the time to polish this game and really make it everything that we now know it as.
Well, in case anyone was wondering why I had Roger to do this episode, now you see that he's providing the learn in this episode of List 'Em and Learn. That was awesome. I mean, Mario, listen, if you have a list of the top 10 NES games and you don't have Super Mario Brothers on it, I don't know what planet you were living on. And yeah, it's, I mean, I will have it on my list. I don't think that's a spoiler to say. It's not. It's coming up, and I will talk more about it there. But yeah, that was great. Thank you.
Awesome.
My number 7 is at least to me another no-brainer. Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. I've never been a huge fan of sports games, whether it be boxing or football or basketball. Even I mean there were some great wrestling games. None for Nintendo. There were some Tecmo wrestling was pretty good, but the Mike Tyson's Punch-Out is really not a sports game. It's a really interesting, almost puzzle or pattern-based game that's under the guise of sports. And within that, they created a bunch of really memorable characters, considering how little you got to see them, and a bunch of really cool character designs. It's a really satisfying game to play. The just like the what's the word? The sensations that it causes, like the bells that it rings in your head. It's just the way the colors are, the way the sound effects. It's just an extremely satisfying experience. And as a kid, it's difficult, but it's not too difficult for you to learn. And so the learning curve is there, but it's not that steep. And as you progress, you learn the different patterns from each of these characters. And, and each new one seems insurmountable. When you get to Bald Bull for the first time, it's like, what the hell am I going to do with this guy? And then you figure out the gut punch. Or, when you get to, Mr. Sandman, and you have to, and yes, he flashes before he does his uppercuts, and you figure that out. And then even Mike Tyson, seems impossible the first like 30 or 40 times you play him,
Or
and then you
50.
figure it out. Yeah, but then you figure it out. Mike Tyson is beatable, and it's to me, it's the perfect learning curve for a game like that. And yeah, I just think, I mean, an all-time legendary game. They tried to make different versions on they had Super Punch Out, which I know some people prefer. I certainly couldn't get into it, and they had the Wii version, but nothing to me is as great as the simplicity of the original Mike Tyson's Punch Out, and the way that you could could learn it, the way the sensations, the sound effects, the music, the character design. To me, everything about that game is perfect. Even the little in between round little blurbs. Everyone who played those games will always, remember, join the Nintendo Fun Club today, Mac, or I'll give you a TKO from Tokyo. I mean, that stuff is legendary. Such a simple game, but such a great game. Also, really interesting use of passwords, which, before every game had the save function, a lot of games still use passwords. And you can put in a password to do a completely different circuit. It's just very, I don't know, to me, this is a perfect game, Mike Tyson's Punch Out.
Yeah, I remember that was the one game that like you weren't really into beating every game you could find, but I remember that was the one game years later you could still sit down with and you could go through the whole thing. I remember that was like your game.
I was definitely good at it, but it's also not that difficult, really, if you play it
I
enough.
actually I never was able to beat it. I could get up to Mike Tyson and then he would just kill me, and I got really close, but never all the way. I think I agree. I think that it was originally my number 10, and I thought about it, and I think that what made me decide was that I think that it is so memorable, and it's become part of I think gaming pop culture that everybody
Gaming
knows.
folklore.
Yeah, I think everybody knows about this game, and even if you don't know about it, you've probably seen like a Photoshop image, at some point referencing it. And but I think what did it for me, I think, was that I felt like the gameplay is it feels a bit dated now, and I feel like it hasn't really like led to hasn't had a lot of influence in what gaming is now. But at the same time, I agree that I think it's at that era, it was one of the classics, totally.
Yeah, and if you want to get technical about it, it's a port of an arcade game.
Oh, that's right.
But if you play that arcade game, it is not the same
Yeah.
game. So I consider it an original.
That game
And
is confusing. The arcade game is confusing as hell. I didn't know what to do with it.
yeah, I'm sure if you give it enough, you could figure it out.
Oh,
But
sure.
worth noting how successful this game was, that even after all of Mike Tyson's legal trouble, and they still were obviously invested enough in selling this game that they put out a new version with Mike
Yes.
Tyson removed. Same exact game, but just called Punch Out, and where Mike Tyson and all of his movements are replaced with Mr. Dream.
I
And
thought that was the lamest replacement. Like he did, like he just seemed like the most boring. Like Mike Tyson was such a giant final boss, and now you have like this generic Mr. Dream.
well, there was no one else in boxing that gave the same image.
Yeah.
Evander Holyfield, he certainly wouldn't have, he had some of his own games, but he did not create the iconic image that Mike Tyson
Yeah.
did at the time.
But something at least more badass seeming. I agree with your point though that it was, yeah, overall.
My number seven, Mike Tyson's Punch Out. Roger's number seven, Super Mario Brothers. Roger, what's your number six?
And now normally I'm not including different sequels or different versions of games, but I felt like Mario Brothers and Mario 3, they're just so different and have done different things that I can't. I feel like I need to put on separate spots. So I did Mario 3, and it is just.
At number six. Wow. Okay.
Yes. And why? I mean, like, instead of higher?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, this is what I'm talking about, where this is my personal opinion, because, like, I don't think that there's anything more influential than Mario 3. I think that it is, it was kind of the ultimate Nintendo game. It had, it used this chip called the MMC3. It had extra RAM, it had extra tiles, and games in general, they started to add more stuff on them because, the system was pretty old, so the only way to, even when Nintendo came out, it was pretty limited. So the way you would add stuff was to add add more to the cartridge. And but even by that standard, this was like a mega cartridge. It was one of the most advanced cartridges of that time. I think it's the best-selling game of all time. Like sold that. If you're counting games that are sold separately from a system, because obviously, Sonic and original Mario sold more because they sold the systems. But it is just it is considered one of the best games of all time by a lot of people. And the precedent it set. I mean, Mario 2 US, Doki Doki Panic in Japan, it's pretty much forgotten. The Japanese Mario 2 was considered like the only failure in the entire Mario series. It was just Mario 1 harder with more crap in it that they never used again. And then this just was an explosion of stuff that the series has used ever since. It added so many things that are now staples of the series, that each kingdom in Mario 1, each world is just the same basically. This now you have a theme for every world. There's like a desert world, there's a giant world where everything's huge. It was and the it just added all these different flying and floating, and you could slide down, you could have new jump types. There was just so much stuff added to this. It was huge. The reason I think that you kind of segued into my what I why this is where it is on my list, I think is because of what I have said earlier about I think my greatest interest in games is the aesthetic, the presentation, the experience. And as amazing and probably, groundbreaking the gameplay was, I think ultimately the very I kind of Disney-esque influence of it, and kind of it's cartoony and everything, and I think it's brilliant, but I think that ultimately it didn't speak to me in the same way as other games that fit more my aesthetic sensibility. But gameplay-wise, I have nothing bad to say about this.
It's very gonna be very interesting that you to hear your top five that doesn't have either Super Mario Brothers or Super Mario Brothers 3 in it. That's gonna be fascinating. But everything you said about Mario 3, I agree with, and quite then some. So I'll save that. My number six is River City Ransom, and you already talked about it. I'll echo what you said. I mean, what did it for me? I love RPGs. It probably is the genre that I stuck with longest. I don't really play a ton of video games anymore. I blame it on my attention span, not the games themselves. But RPGs were the thing that, got me through, like my later video game playing years. And River City Ransom combined those kinds of things into a, like you said, a smash 'em up, almost like side-scrolling fighter, like a Double Dragon type game. And it really blew my mind, like, because I started playing it, it was a rental, when I was a little kid, and this came out very shortly after I got my NES, and it, I started playing it. And I just, I assumed it was going to be another Double Dragon type game. Then all of a sudden, I was buying stuff, and I was doubling back, and I was learning different moves, and I was like, holy shit, this is its own thing. And I think, even, much like Blaster Master, and maybe it was a little bit more conventional than Blaster Master, but I still can't think of any other games that did this. And maybe it's probably because that side-scrolling fighting genre kind of disappeared once you got past like the mid-90s and kind of the Streets of Rage era. But the fact that River City Ransom was able to combine that all so well in kind of a humorous package, it took almost that like weird NES like dodgeball style character design, and it turned it into like a fighter. So it kind of took away, I guess, a little bit of like the intensity from it because the characters look so goofy, I guess. But in a way that adds to its charm, I
I
think.
was going to say when you were talking about that, it's maybe a little more conventional in some ways, but I think the sense of humor, and this is the general sensibility of it. It's just there's a quirkiness to it that I think that that's what really elevates it as such a memorable game because of the because fighting games are usually very deadly serious, and there's such a there's so many conventions to it, and it kind of just didn't care about any of that. And I think the only game I can think of that was similar was maybe Earthbound, with a similar kind of quirky sensibility to it, and that's rare to see.
Yeah, I mean, there were others, but this is the one that could put it in the package that made it work the most, because it also, had gameplay that you had to take seriously, so it wasn't a total joke. And but it added enough levity that you're right, some of these games, they do take themselves so seriously, and it's like, or it becomes kind of melodrama in a bad way. And this certainly wasn't that, but it was a great game all around.
Yeah, I mean, like Double Dragon starts with the guy punching a woman. It's very deadly serious.
It's always appreciated to have a game that understands that it's a game. Not that there's no place for seriousness, but you want to have some fun too.
I think it also just allows, it kind of frees the game to be a little more creative with how it presents itself too.
That's a very good point also. We're ready to get into our top fives.
All right.
Roger's number six was Mario 3. My number six was River City Ransom. Roger, number five.
Now, I only chose one Castlevania, and this was a hard choice because I think all three are awesome. I've played them all the way through. I've played them multiple times. I love the Castlevania series, so this was not an easy decision for me. But I just have to say this is easily the most polished of the NES era of Castlevania. I mean, one was is very, very, very big, and honestly, I like two. It at the time it was confusing, and I didn't know what the hell was going on, and no one really I know liked it in the same way. But I think it had elements that later were used, but it wasn't a polished game. It was like a bunch of ideas, like a lot of ideas that later were perfected. But at that point, it's like they're like, here's a bunch of shit. Sorry, it's not fun. So this it kind of three, which I think was common at that time, actually, where the second game was experimental, like Zelda 2, for example. Like that got a lot of negative reaction in comparison.
Mario 2.
Exactly. And then the third game comes around, and then they kind of perfect the first game and are a little more conservative, but not necessarily in a bad way. Just it's better. And I think this game it was still, but I what made me pick it as well was because it's not just better. It does add new gameplay elements that have been huge later on. I mean the fact that the first game was completely linear. You just go through it, one character, that's it. And two, it tried to make an open world, give you choices. But three, went back to the linear, but still gave you choices on which path you took. So you could actually get some pretty dramatically different levels as a result. So
But couldn't you also choose to play different levels as different characters, and that made the gameplay different
yes,
also?
that's the other thing I was going to get into too, is that it was the first game to introduce playing as multiple characters. You started out, I believe it was Simon, but then you would meet characters, and yes, and depending on which level you chose or which path you chose, you would meet different characters, and then you could choose to either play as yourself and not bring them along, or you could bring them with you. And then as you went along, you would meet more characters. You could choose. There weren't a lot of characters. I think there's only it was Grant, Danasty, which is the strangest name ever. But and then I think I'm going to get butchered for this, but I think Selphie or Sophie, Magician Woman, and then Alucard, Dracula backwards, who he was introduced here. And just the fact that he was introduced in this game is huge because Symphony of the Night kind of brought him back, and he's become a huge thing, as in that game and in the series overall. But
And I think Symphony of the Night is a thing that ended up really cementing the legacy of that series as one of the great series
oh
of
my god,
games.
yeah, Symphony of the Night. I mean, not to get into that too much, but I mean, anything that was used in Symphony of the Night from earlier games gets huge points because that game was, whoo, that was a it was a side scroller in the PlayStation era that just took off. So
Maybe the best side-scrolling game ever made.
yeah, I mean, because then Symphony of the Light, Symphony of the Night led to a huge amount of, basically every Game Boy game after that, the Advance games, the DS games, they all were based on Symphony of the Night. So we to go back, we have a lot of stuff in three that has, started in three. One was it was pretty clunky. I mean, they're all kind of slow, but one was the slowest. And then I felt like three was slightly smoother to play. It just was bigger. And yeah, the multiple characters and the sense of a story to it, the fact that Alucard was trying to rebel against his father. It was like these and it starts off with a scrolling story, and all the music was woof. That they added a chip just to I mean, actually more in Japan than the US, but in Japan they actually added more to the cartridge to allow more sounds and more more complexity to the music, mainly in the percussion. in general, the music for Castlevania, that's a whole other topic, but it is just a lot of classic Castlevania music was, you know, 1 through 3, but definitely in 3 as well. As just, you know, Konami as a company is known for hiring and keeping a team of really like the best composers in the industry. And, you know, there's a lot of that in 3.
All right, very interesting. And I love that game too. It didn't make my list, but very, very, very close. My number five is Mega Man 2, and you said a lot of what I was going to say about it. To me, what I was saying to you before, it's the game that kind of made the series what it became. You know, Mega Man 1, you know, certainly had a lot of the elements, but I think that it wasn't perfected yet. You know, it was a little bit hard. The design was a little bit different. Mega Man 2 kind of threw in all the standard tropes that we'd come to love with Mega Man. I think the graphics became a little more polished, and you know, and some of those characters, you know, Woodman and Flashman, you know, they're among the most memorable villains that of any Mega Man game. I mean, there's not much to add, but it was just that's such a perfect, simple game. You know, the gameplay is very simple, but then you also have the added element of the different power-ups that add a whole different layer to it, and I think that's what makes the series so great, and the character so great. I don't have a ton more to say about it that you didn't say, but my number five is Mega Man 2, and I feel pretty good about it.
Excellent. Actually, if I may add, something I want to add to that is that I just thought it was funny how both Mega Man 1 and 2 had these really, I mean, I'm not exaggerating. They're pretty awful box art and cover art for those games. Like, they were clearly like not just an American artist, but somebody who really didn't play the games and didn't really understand them. And it was just funny to see how for the first two, for some reason, they decided to do that, and then 3 forward, they actually, you know, the series is an anime inspired series. I mean, you know, like Mega Man is based on Astro Boy. I mean, it was kind of eye opening to realize that later on, like, oh yeah, it's just Astro Boy. So, you know, it's like a huge anime influence. And to see 3 forward in the US, they started to actually, you know, use that style instead of the awkward, you know, human Mega Man person holding a pistol instead of like an actual gun. You remember
Yes, a little bit.
that? It was just, it's like literally the guy who drew the Mega Man 2. I read a little bit where he said that he had never played the game. He was looked at it, and he was like, "Is he holding a pistol?" And they told him, "Oh yeah, it's a pistol. Just draw a pistol." And he was like, "Oh, okay." And since then, he's defended it. Like, he's ashamed of it.
Nice. Number four. Let's hear it.
Okay. Ninja, is it? I was to say Gaiden, but I guess it's Gaiden too.
Yeah, Gaia, Gaiden, Gaiden.
And to clarify the Dark Sword of Chaos, because now they have the Ninja Gaidens rebooting, and if you look online, it'll pop up as the new ones. So this was the original Dark Sword of Chaos, I'm kind of speaking for the series again here, and I chose to for a lot of what you said already. I'd like to add specifically what appealed to me in particular was the expand on, you know, it wasn't just that it was like these cinematic vignettes, but it was that it was literally like a letterbox, like 16:9 ratio. And they would, you know, have these close-ups of people's faces. You know, people kind of dabbled with maybe an image of somebody talking on the screen to make it semi-cinematic. This was like by far the closest, you know, to actually looking visually aesthetically like a film. And I think that I kind of, you know, you can kind of give it some credit for, you know, the whole gaming industry trying to become more like movies over time. I mean, granted, Miyamoto, who designed Mario and Zelda, he was always inspired by films. And he was always, you know, that was his basis, you know, like Donkey Kong is based on King Kong, but you know, he never really was interested in presenting a game as a movie. Ninja Gaiden, the series, I think it really is one of the first examples of really trying to make a game feel like a movie. And you can see that having a long legacy after that, a lot of bad games that literally are movies in the 90s, you know, like the CD-ROM games, and it kind of goes wrong. But I think it was, you know, I think for me personally, I rated pretty high because it's kind of what everything I was interested in about a game. Like it wasn't just the gameplay, but it had a story and it felt cinematic. And the music is probably one of my favorite, from speaking as of the series as a whole, the music is probably one of my favorite soundtracks of all time, like just from the NES era or video game gaming in general. I just think everything about it aesthetically, it was very dark, and I really like dark, horrific elements. I guess finally to say why I chose two, it's getting a lot of what you said. It polishes one. It's a little easier, but not easy at all. One is the hardest, in my opinion.
There are some NES games that are just straight up too
Yeah.
hard, and I think they were figuring it out at the time. And I think even like I mean I think all the best games on this list, they're not too easy. They're a good level of
Oh no, yeah,
challenge.
they're all really hard, a lot of them. Except for Mario 3, that wasn't as bad. But yeah, I mean, actually, what's interesting too is that the US version was actually harder than the Japanese version.
Which is rare.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so random reading about those things. But but I think what I liked about two was that one, it was kind of clunky, like it was a little awkward to jump around and move around. And two, really, it was so smooth. It was and then three kind of copied that same thing. And it was just yeah, I think what you said is true. I think the gameplay, there's really nothing terribly revolutionary about it. Like I can't say, oh, that Ninja Gaiden gameplay has gone on to revolutionize the industry, but I just think that the aesthetic presentation. I mean, just like that opening cinematic that I mentioned earlier of Ninja Gaiden 2, of it's very dramatic music, and it's like these wide shots of I think it's Ashtar, like this. Boss character standing, and very, it just, it was something about it that really, I remember seeing that at your house actually, for the first time, and that just that little cinematic has like left an impression on me ever since. So.
I think it's a good point about the mood. Like, the Nintendo, had a good mix of games where it's like very lighthearted and silly, and then like these other games like a Castlevania and a Ninja Gaiden, which is just like dark and moody. And I think probably all the great dark moody games that we enjoy now are probably in some way owe something to those early ones that kind of first experimented with that kind of tone for a video game.
I think that's true. Yeah.
I know you're a big fan of the Silent Hill
Yeah.
series, and I mean, you might not say, okay, Ninja Gaiden led to Silent Hill, but I think you could draw a line. So it might be a squiggly line, but you could draw a line back to
That's
it.
actually true because if you look back at the Nintendo era, Nintendo was very, very controlling over how they released games. I'm not going to say exactly, but or let's say roughly 3 games a year per publisher, which is ridiculous by today's standards, and they had a very heavy censorship. You couldn't do a lot of things, especially unique to the US. They were kind of very harsh on religious things that would, okay, in Japan, but they would take out religious references. So for a game that had a lot of very dark elements, like you're going to these hellish, I think in some parts probably, like it feels like you're going into hell at some points, and these demons and there's this violence. And I think that in the next era of the Genesis, Super Nintendo era, I feel like this was, you can probably point to this as one of the earlier truly dark games that you saw a lot more of that later on, but not as much in at on the NES.
Right. My number four is not dark. It is Super Mario Brothers, number one. And I mean, you said a lot before. To me, I mean, this is just like I said my big thing is the gameplay design, and pretty much this invented the modern video
Yeah.
game. So
Yep.
I mean, how could you like how could I not rank it this high? Whether I mean there were other platform games before this, obviously, but the whole idea of warping and looping and the coin collection and what you get out of it and the interiors and exteriors and the underwater levels and just the backgrounds, the graphics, looking back now, they're not super colorful or rich, but man, at the time, compared to like those games that came before it, they're pretty impressive. And that little weird pixely Mario, still everyone remembers him, and he got more fleshed out, by Mario 3. But This was, this is that that's the icon of Nintendo, and that's the iconic video game. Whether, I mean, you talk about video game music, which you're, I know you're bigger on than I am. It might not be the most, dark and creative and interesting music ever written. Damn if it's not one of the more memorable hooks that I've ever heard.
No, I think
And
that that it's something that I think that it resonates with a lot of people, and it's musically, it's very very I don't know if literary is the right word, but like it has like body rhythms and it kind of like like has a very clear genre it's working in. It's not a bunch of bleeps and bloops. It's an actual piece of music. So I think that's no, it's very well written.
All right, so my number four was Super Mario Brothers 1. Roger's number four was Ninja Gaiden 2. Roger, we're getting into it. Number three, actually, you don't have a number three, and which is fine. Just explain what happened.
Yeah, so I had 10, and I was revising it, and then I just realized that while revising it, I removed one of them somehow, and now I have 9. So I'll just at the end when we talk about stuff we didn't use, I can mention what I cut out.
All right, so just everything that Roger had, just add a bump it up one number. So Ninja Gaiden 2 was actually Roger's number three, and my number three is Metroid. And yeah, I was actually surprised to hear you had it as low as you were, especially knowing the affection you have for Castlevania Symphony of the Night, because this is the obvious precursor to it. If any game is,
Oh
I mean
yeah.
this and Super Metroid, of course, and yeah, Metroid is, I mean, just yeah, one of the all-time great games. I think it holds up. I mean, what I love about it is the non-linearity of it, and the fact that you can go back and forth via it all. I don't know, I think this also is a very, it's a very dark, like you talked about the music, the moodiness.
Yeah.
It's a very dark world.
Yeah.
First of all, it's like an underworld, the entire thing. The bosses are all fairly monstrous and terrifying if you think about it.
Actually, the name Metroid is a combination of, I mean, granted, these are Japanese people, but it was a combination of Metro and Android. Metro in the sense of like, like in a metropolitan city, like underground.
Metrosexual.
Or metrosexual, we can go there, but kind of like a feeling of being underground in like in a postmodern city or something. I don't know. Just
Post-industrial
post-industrial is the right word
is
there,
what you're
yeah.
looking for.
And originally the character was supposed to be more of like an robotic android, so it was like Android Underground.
But the fact that it wasn't actually made it cool. The different, like the flips and the spinnies and the, it was, the mechanics were not super alien, no pun intended,
Right. Yes.
to players of Nintendo games, but they were also a little just different enough to make it unique. So a little bit more flexibility there in what Samus could do. And I think just the world is so super memorable, and clearly, not as influential as the Mario games or Zelda, but it's clearly very, very influential. And so I think Super Metroid takes it to another level. That's another all-time classic game. But as far as influential games that are fun to play, that hold up, that are interesting, moody, dark, all those things, I think Metroid has everything. To me, that's an easy pick for number three.
Yeah, it's funny, I was when I put it so low, I was like, this really deserves to be higher in a lot of ways. And I think that ultimately for me, it came down to just the fact that it just didn't resonate with me in the same way. And I think that might have had to do with just the fact that I found the game kind of overwhelming, perhaps. And I think I got very lost in it. And I think that I wasn't able to get as immersed just because it felt kind of overly confusing for me at that time. I don't know.
I think that's fair. I mean, I felt about that way about some other games too. I think in some ways though, when a game is really good, that's almost one of the good parts about Nintendo, is that there's just more exploration involved in especially the non-linear or less linear Nintendo games.
Yes.
When like, now there's a little, it's a little bit for newer games, they give you a little bit more to go on. And back then it was a lot of just self-discovery. I mean, not discovering stuff yourself, not
Yes.
discovering yourself. Well, you could say discover, never mind.
Playing a video game is a journey of self-discovery.
Moving on. Metroid, my number three. Awesome game. Roger, what is your number two?
Number two, I think you will not find this surprising at all. I have a lot of thoughts on this series that I could go on for a long time about. But number two, Final Fantasy. It is just, I mean, for those who don't know, it's called Final Fantasy because it was considered the final game by the company at that point. They were not doing very well, and then the game did very well, so it no longer was the final game. And you know, it's considering the fact that, you know, this company did not make RPGs. It was not like, you know, it wasn't really as established of a genre. It was different. You know, now we think of Final Fantasy as the ultimate, you know, dead horse that gets beaten forever until the end of time. But at that time, you know, like there was a Dragon Warrior, which was like a first person where you walk and then the enemy appears in a little box and then you go through a menu. You know, this game, you actually had a whole cast of characters that you walked around with, and when you went into battle, you would see them. And then you would see like not just one monster, but like multiple monsters. And the artwork was actually really nice. They had, you know, the designer of the artwork, he's gone on to do, you know, many memorable, well-known designs. And he worked with Neil Gaiman. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this artist, he's, you know, with us, you know, he's worked with Neil Gaiman since then to create artwork for Neil Gaiman stories. You know, the artwork was huge, huge. They made a big deal with that. And, you know, at that point, it was more cartoony and it wasn't as serious. And I mean, it just was like a monolith of RPG history. There's so much that I feel like was that copied this game, including the other Final Fantasies. And the music, I mean, kind of made Nobuo Uematsu kind of one of the most beloved and well-known video game composers of all time, to the point that a lot of people don't like Final Fantasy music and are sick of him and the music and think he's overrated. But the fact that it got to that point shows how beloved it became. And it all started with this game. The prelude was the first in this game that has been remixed 1,000 times. You know, you can find it online anywhere. There is just this is a giant first for RPGs. My only it's not my top pick because I do feel that for everything that it did, that I think that it hasn't, you know, what it led to, I don't necessarily think is a good thing. I feel that RPGs, you know, have not really progressed in a way that I'm happy with. So I feel like that, you know, it's been influential, but ultimately, I feel like I'm my age is showing here, and I'm sure many people would bring up games I've never played before at this point. But anything I've tried, I feel like, you know, the genre has not, you know, moved on to great, amazing, innovative firsts. After, let's say, Final Fantasy IV or, you know, or six, if you like six, you know, like, I don't know. But that all said, I think that this is just, yeah, I played the hell out of this. I remember when we I first saw it at your house again, and we had no idea what we were doing. You remember that? Like, we would just like, mash all the buttons in the combat menu.
Oh yeah, I mean, how? Listen, how could kids our age have any clue how to
Yeah.
navigate that the first time you play it?
You're like, how do we play this? It's like I just hit a bunch of buttons and maybe it'll work, and we had no idea. And the very early, you know, Nintendo Power, they released an entire Nintendo Power guide on Final Fantasy as a promotional thing, which they never did back then to promote it. You know, it was,
Yeah, for free, with your Nintendo Power subscription, I believe.
yeah, exactly. If you had Nintendo Power, I mean, it wasn't free, but if you had a subscription, and they just promoted the hell out of it because the US, you know, people in the US, I don't think they considered the US market really open to RPGs in the same way. So it was, yeah, I mean, it's just huge, huge, huge influence here. It's just big influence.
And as we hear the ice cream truck in the background,
Yes.
I have two questions for you. What do you feel about the influence of a game like Dragon Warrior, which, to be fair, came before Final Fantasy and did include a lot of the same elements? You mentioned it, but how do you feel that game holds up as far as influence?
I think, I mean, there's a little bit of bias there because I never got into Dragon Warrior, but I think the series never appealed to me because it's there's a difference and that the, I mean, first of all, the music. I mean, it's very well respected and it's well done, but it's more of a traditional Baroque soundtrack, which is it's I think it's less romantic and emotional than the Final Fantasy music, which is it's not really, you know, classical music per se, but it has like it's a very, you know, passionate, personalized kind of music that it's more all over the place. You know, like it later on, especially, you know, you would it's kind of hinted at in the early games, but there's like these rock elements brought into it, or prog rock all over the place later on, and just it's just it's kind of a little wacky, and it's a little different. And I feel like Dragon Warrior is a little more well, it was a huge influence and very, very influential. I feel like everything that made RPGs interesting to me, you know, like the emphasis on more serious. I mean, the first game was pretty deadly serious. It was just a bunch of your character kind of stares at you with this like very morose. I don't think it was intentional, but you know what I'm talking about, like no one's
Yeah.
smiling in these games. It just had a
Yeah.
very, and the artwork was very elaborate. The bosses were like these huge drawings, and you know, if you look at Dragon Warrior, you know, you have like the most common enemy is the slime, a little smiling blob, and you know, it's I think this again, the aesthetic and the presentation is very different, more cartoony, more kind of the older style in Final Fantasy, is more of the, you know, cinematic later generation stuff.
All right, and my second question, because you mentioned you were not happy with the way RPGs have progressed, what would you have liked to have seen from that genre?
Oh God, that's an excellent question. And I think that actually, to be fair, I think that, you know, one thing that I wanted to see was to have, I think Final Fantasy XII did it. I never played it, but you know, it went away from the turn-based combat and went into more of like a, like, you know, Parasite Eve style, where you know, you can walk around and actually, you know, fight the monster in on a real time. So I mean, I guess it has come in more into play more often. But I think that overall, what has done it for me is that I feel like, oh, you know, I'll say this: Earthbound. Earthbound is what I think RPGs should be. It's just completely different. It's just there's the, you know, RPGs are very conservative. They know what works, and they just, you know, they do these slight variations on it, but in the end, it's always a fantasy. You might see something that's more modern for in some kind of way, but in the end, it's using these same kind of tropes over and over again. And if it's more modern, then it's already been done somewhere else, you know, like.
Just, you're saying it's either old school fantasy or some sort of future dystopia.
Yes, exactly. And it's like those can you can do amazing things with both of those, but it's not the fact that it's a fantasy or it's a dystopia, but it's, you know, it's based on doing what works, because these series make a lot of money. And I think that's ultimately my concern. And something like Earthbound is, you know, it's just, I can't even put it into words. It's just completely out there and completely different. And it
All right.
really, I think that's important.
Yeah, and now let's just to be clarify, it does seem like most of your issues with the genre have to do with the types of stories that that they tell, and the types of set, you know, scenery, and the types of setting, and the types of characters, more so than the actual gameplay elements.
Well, I guess,
Yeah,
I
I know you talked about the turn-based, but it seems like is it fair to say most of your objections come from kind of the storytelling elements of it.
guess. Well, I guess it's. I guess I guess I'm not sure what I would suggest, because I don't want to sound complainy. But I think that what turns me off to them is still the gameplay, where I feel like, there's a, you know, I don't want to sit down for 50 hours to, you know, where most of those hours are spent grinding. You know, like they've gotten better with grinding, but I feel like grinding is.
Let's make clear what that phrase means.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Grinding is when, you know, you just go into the battles over and over and over again to build up your whatever you need to do in that game. It was the worst in Final Fantasy One. It was absolutely awful in comparison to even Final Fantasy IV, but for Japan, for to US, whatever. But you know, it's just something kind of inherent to the genre. So I'm not really sure if you know, what you can do about that, and maybe more games have gotten better with that. But ultimately, to me, it's just I just the thought of of an RPG is like, oh God, I need to sit down for 50 hours and go into combat for like 80% of that time or something.
I think that's a fair objection that a lot of people probably share. For me, I love Final Fantasy. The series especially is one of the last series that I've stuck with, as my video game interest waned. Final Fantasy One's not on my list. Just couldn't justify putting it above the 10 games I had on it. I also, as far as influence, I do struggle with what was more influential, Final Fantasy or Dragon Warrior, because I believe Dragon Warrior influenced Final Fantasy, for one thing.
Yes, it did. Absolutely.
And that's a little bit tough for me, but certainly respect that choice. It's a very interesting choice for number two, but a great important game. My number two, I say, yeah, my number two is a little game called The Legend of Zelda. And I don't think, but anybody who's listening that has heard this hasn't been on our list yet, probably wouldn't be surprised to hear that. I mean, as far as RPGs go, it's not an RPG in the traditional turn-based sense. I guess it's what's known as an action RPG, right? That would be the name for that genre, an RPG with just real-time fighting. But I mean, it was I don't know if it was the first Nintendo game. I'm not an historian, but I feel comfortable saying it was the first or one of the first Nintendo games to really do the action RPG thing with the leveling up of your character as well as your weapon, finding different armor. Making purchases, using money, and deploying that money in strategic ways, and and then the sense of adventure of the finding the different places you had to go, and the different hoops you had to jump through to find those places, and the way it could sometimes feel like you're in this never-ending maze in order to actually find the place, and sometimes you were in a never-ending maze that you had to go in the right direction in to get out of, and it just it was, I mean, this was a very, when you think about the year it came out, it's a very early Nintendo game, way earlier than a lot of these other games that were similar. And it's a lot more basic than some of those games, but I think j at least as satisfying as any of them. And the Zelda series, went on to do many, many other great things. A ton of amazing games came in all the other generation video game systems, but this was the first. Maybe it's not the best to play now, but still pretty great. And it's, the satisfaction you get from it is a lot simpler. The charms are a lot simpler. The graphics are a hell of a lot simpler. But but all the stuff that it does as far as influence, I don't think I could say enough about it. It's as influential, not as influential Super Mario Brothers, but I don't think it's too far off. And it I think it's the gameplay is a lot more unique for its time. And it didn't have another sequel on the system, on the same system, that really took it to another level. I think the second Legend of Zelda game, certainly has its pluses. It's another game that's incredibly difficult, but it could never overshadow the original. And Legend of Zelda, one of the all-time classics of video games.
Yeah, I feel like Zelda 2, there are some people who actually like Zelda 2,
Oh,
and playing
a lot of people do, and
and
it's a great game in its way.
but no, but let me say that I think that I think in the end, it's for all of its pluses, yeah, I think they pretty much scrapped everything from two. I mean, not everything, but I don't feel like they really revisited anything from that game, and I think that says a lot.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. Certainly at the time it wasn't that well received. And that's a big part of it too. So my number two, Legend of Zelda. Roger's number two, Final Fantasy. Roger, number one.
Well, coincidentally, it is my number one is Legend of Zelda, and I guess I would say specifically why it's my number one. Because I think there's a lot of reasons I chose this, and because I think that it's not just the game. I mean, I was kind of rambling about RPGs, but I feel like my main point is that I think that what I gravitate more towards are kind of action adventure games within the genre, and Legend of Zelda was one of the first. I mean, it's actually interesting. You know that in Japan, this was released on the Famicom disk system, and it was on a disk, and you could save to the disk, and I believe, yes, this was the first game in the US to have a battery on the cartridge because they were like, this game is important enough. We need to figure out some way so the people in the US can, save and play it. And it was that's a huge first. It was the
Yeah,
first.
that you're right, and that is a big omission that I made.
And it's also the first gold cartridge. it was shitey. I think only Zelda 2 did it after that, but
What about Link to the Past for SNES? Was that gold?
actually no, I think it was gray.
Okay.
It's weird. They never, I don't think they stuck with that. Oh no, Zelda 64 did, but again, like a limited run thing. But anyway, I think that aside from, actually no, let me first just say that I think what really, this was a game that just like permeated my childhood. It was everywhere. When I was younger, I mentioned I didn't have many games, and I'd always go to people's houses and play stuff, and like, I would play little bits of Zelda, and it would be like this mysterious game, and I was fascinated by it. And I just it just and then I would rent it, and then and then since the battery was old on the rental games, then the battery would die and you'd lose your save, and I'd get angry. And then, I played the game over and over again, and I never got to get through all of it. And then probably like a few years later, my mom finally bought it for me, and it was the most, I just devoured it, and I was able to actually save my game without it dying. And everything about that game was just like, I think left a huge impression on me. I think everything was done brilliantly. I think it holds up now because it's very simple gameplay that it's introduced without any text or explanations really. And it's kind of it's I think even by today's standards it's groundbreaking because it says figure it out. You need to use you need to burn a bush to get to a dungeon. You need to, bomb this wall. You need to just figure all of these things out. And that sense of exploration, which was Miyamoto, that was based on his childhood of exploring. I think that there are very few games that are so about that experience of exploring and discovering an environment. And I think that that's what really appeals to me the most about games in general. It's less about the grinding, it's less about, stats or whatever. It's about exploring an environment. And Zelda is just enough gameplay where it's not like, a visual novel where you just literally read a story and you just go through all the text and read it, and there's not much interaction. And an action adventure game, it just gives you a little bit of gameplay, a very simple gameplay usually. And if I can, I will still link this forward to Silent Hill, because and adventure games in general, because the survival horror genre, which Silent Hill is in, Resident Evil, they're all based on an adventure game. You just add, it's an adventure game plus action. And this is the I see huge similarities between all of that later stuff and Legend of Zelda, which was just all about atmosphere, all about exploring. And music was pretty simple, but who doesn't remember
Yeah,
that the music?
I'd say equal to the Mario soundtrack.
It's a very, it's very, very iconic music. But ultimately, I think the reason it's my number one is more just because it just purely appeals to my sensibilities of I was of immersion in the environment, and even little details like when I was first in a dungeon, and there are these little sculptures of faces that look terrified. And as a kid, that just it, like it just made me wonder, like, what did they see that scared them? And, like, it just made me like use my imagination and think about the environment I was in versus just viscerally smashing buttons and trying to beat a level. So that is just my number one easily.
All right, very good. Don't have, certainly, I mean, it's my number two. I don't have much to argue there. All-time great, super influential game. Before I do my number one, I want to mention just some of my honorable mentions really quick. Bionic Commando, which is an excellent game. The only reason that it's really not on my list is that when I played it and rented it way back when, it was just too hard for me.
That game is really hard.
Yeah, and I didn't get very far. And I know how great that game is. And I just didn't play it enough to really get out of it what I wanted to get out of it. One game I did certainly play enough of was DuckTales, and that's another honorable
Oh,
mention for
yeah.
me. Just an amazing side scroller. Creates a layer of non-linearity. I mean, really, it didn't matter which order you did it in, so that kind of takes points away from it. It certainly didn't affect the game, but just interesting gameplay, good artwork. That's a very memorable soundtrack too. And it was a short but very satisfying game. Final Fantasy, Dragon Warrior, obviously. Castlevania 3 definitely was something that I was wrestling with putting on that list. I didn't end up putting it on. And the other one was Mega Man 3. Which, like I said, it took a lot of the elements that made Mega Man 2 great, added Rush, which is a long-standing character, added the sliding option. So, all those things, all those games could have easily slid onto my list. Do you have any other honorable mentions that you haven't mentioned?
Yeah, it's funny since if I had gone back, I would have one of these would have made my number 10 probably. So I mean, I did have Punch Out. I Battletoads was just I think that was more just for the challenge factor, the fact that it was probably considered one of the hardest games of the NES era. No one really bothered to play it after the bike level, and I was able to beat it, and that was, just but I don't think it was a great game. Blaster Master was there, Castlevania 1 and 2, Conquest of the Crystal Palace, which is probably not a good game, but I really love that game. Yeah, I don't think I had any, not much I could say for it. Contra is another one that, like, I don't think gameplay wise it's that revolutionary, but again, such a defining childhood thing.
I'm glad someone mentioned it because I probably would have gotten hell if no one mentioned Contra in this.
Yeah, I mean, oh my God! I mean, there's nothing. Looking back, there's nothing that I don't even know what I was thinking then. But oh my God, that was just oof. It was Contra. It was just every like I remember just playing it over and over again. Double Dragon 1 and 2. Again, nothing revolutionary, but childhood.
Double Dragon 3, also a very good game.
Oh yeah, I like 3. No one liked 3, but I liked it. And then actually, I like Mario too. No nostalgia. I can't really justify
Oh, you can't
it.
justify that? That's a great game.
Mario, you think so?
Mario 2, I will debate with you for. If you're saying that's not a good game, that's a great game. Super Mario Brothers 2, excellent video game.
Actually, yeah, I guess so. I think it's not considered, like
It's
anything.
not groundbreaking, and it's an aberration in the series. It's basically 100% different, other than the characters you play as.
Yeah.
But the ability to play as the other characters, it's just great level design, and and a fun game. That's a to me that's a no-brainer. If this was a top 25, that would be on it for me easily.
That's true. I mean, I definitely enjoyed it, and it was it again like childhood, moment kind of thing. I never forget that game, and it's funny. Even in college, for some reason, people would say to me, I barely even knew sometimes. They're like, "Did you know that Mario 2 was Doki Doki Panic?" And it's like, yeah, people, no one's forgotten it, I think. And Mega Man 3, yeah, again, it was my tie, kind of. And then Shadowgate, which
I never played that.
I don't think there's very much merit to this game. It's basically, point and click on NES, and it was very it's pretty silly, I think. But another one I was just obsessed with at that point, and I many fond memories of that. And same for Star Tropics.
Oh yeah, Star Tropics is another one that
Yes.
should have would should I should have mentioned also. That was a
Yeah.
great game.
Yeah. Again, it's like I can't think of, oh, this revolutionized the genre, but it was awesome. It was fun. It was cool.
And I'd be remiss not to mention some of the great Nintendo puzzle games. Tetris, obviously,
Yeah.
although I don't really consider that since I think it's sort of a port. The Adventures of Lolo, several different
Oh yeah.
versions of that game.
Yes.
Very satisfying puzzle games. And come on, Bubble Bobble. That's
Yes.
one of the all-time most fun games that you could play.
Yes.
So with all that being said, my number one is Super Mario Brothers 3. I think probably a very predictable choice. Probably if you take 100 lists of the best NES games of all time,
Yeah.
Mario 3 will be listed as number one on more than half of them. I think that's safe to say. It took everything the original did great, added to it tenfold. You could take to the air. The levels were more colorful. The graphics were better. They did the gimmicks with the different levels, whether it be the giant level or the water level or the fiery level. It made a much more satisfying ending to the game than the original one did.
Oh yeah, that was a big difference.
I mean the ability to warp, they took that to a new level, with all different kinds of power-ups and different secrets. Just way
Oh
more
yeah.
tricks. It did every like I said, every single thing the original did great, it kept and it built upon it tenfold. I mean, just I'd say the pinnacle of side-scrolling platform gaming, level-based, There's that. There's Super Mario World for the SNES, and there's Castlevania Symphony of the Night, and I mean, those are the elite games. And Mario 3 is like the ultimate Nintendo era game. It's just everything that everyone remembers about that system, put into one little package, done perfectly. And the timing was great because it came out right after I got my NES. So I had Mario. I had Mario 2. Very shortly after, boom, Mario 3 was out, and it just took everything that I liked about video games, and like I said, put them all in one little package. And I don't see too much debate on this one. Mario 3 is my number one.
Yeah, I think that is a very safe choice. Again, like when I was looking it up online, it was just I think I wasn't aware of just how universally beloved it is to to on every level, critically, sales. It just I think it's still considered like the game. It's funny for me. I think I had I think there was something about Super Mario World that I think that left more of an impression on me, but again, everything in Mario World is just building on three, so I would agree that three is pretty huge.
Well, also, I would have put Mario World up there, except it wasn't for the NES.
Yes.
But fair enough. I take your point.
Right, just in the sense of
So, those are our lists. Roger, before we wrap up, do you have any final thoughts or anything you wanted to add on this topic? Because you've been an amazing guest. Your wealth of knowledge is highly valuable and appreciated.
I'm just waiting for now people to correct me on everything, but I tried.
I don't think anyone who's going to listen is going to be cool or slash nerdy enough to correct
yeah,
you.
yeah. Just saying, I'm not an expert, but I know a few things, so I'm open to being corrected on anything. And I would also like just to mention one other reject title is Wizards and Warriors, which just again had no redeeming qualities. Ultimately, it's not a classic game, but also. I think the sequel had Fabio on the box art.
It sure did, and actually the sequel I liked a lot better than the original. That was actually a solid game, Iron Sword.
Yeah, it was I never I think there was something just about the earlier games that they were everywhere and they left more of a childhood impression. But yeah, I think 2 was much more of an actual game in comparison. I think that is it for me.
All right. Well, thank you again. I greatly
Thank you for
appreciated.
having me.
Oh, no problem. And I will definitely have you back. And I greatly
Thanks.
appreciated your contributions to the show. I thought it was great. And I thank everyone for listening. So we'll be back next time with surprise, a wrestling themed episode of Listem and Learn. So hope you're all looking forward to that. And until then, read a damn book if you want to learn something. Have a good one.